Hey everybody, my name's Sandy and I'm an addict. I want to start by saying, you know, San Fernando Valley Convention Committee, thank you. Let's all give them a big round of applause. It takes a lot of hard work to put on a convention, and that's what we're doing. We're celebrating our recovery. You know, to the hotel staff, thank you for welcoming us. For those of you who listen to the rules that the convention committee asked you to respect, thank you. For those of you who didn't, keep coming back. I gotta say that I am always humbled that somebody thinks that I have a message of Narcotics Anonymous to share. You know, I got clean in an area that just celebrated as an area we formed 38 years ago. I have 38 years clean. I love having been a part of what this is. I feel like I am standing in the footprints of giants that went before me, people with 54 years, 49 years, 47 years, you know. There was, when I got clean, there were people that, the whole fellowship, you know, we may have had like 8 years clean altogether. Nobody had time. We were the blind leading the blind. We didn't have much literature. You know, Karen was laughing about the pamphlet babies, and I'm one of those pamphlet babies. You know, that's what we had to read. And, you know, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I could go to a convention in Narcotics Anonymous and I could hear that recovery was alive and well around the world. You know, the first time I heard somebody with 5 years clean was at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. I went to my first convention when I was 5 months clean, and the miracle of recovery bit me. This bug is infectious. This love for Narcotics Anonymous is infectious. You know, the life that I have here is not something that I ever thought that I would get to live. You know, I'm a satisfied customer in Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about, you know, who I am and where I come from and how I got here and why I stay here. So, you know, I am the product of two people who did not want a child. My mother was 15 when she got pregnant. My father was 20. If there were other options, I wouldn't be here talking to you, you know. I used to blame God, saying, why the hell did you give me two parents who hated me? Didn't I deserve one? I come from a long line of addicts. I'm the fourth generation in a long line, and I'm the first to find recovery and stay in recovery. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. My children have never seen addiction. They have never seen violence. They have never seen, you know, beatings and neglect and hunger and shame and abuse. You know, they have not seen that because I have been here. So, you know, these two people had this child, and, you know, for the longest time I blamed them for every shortfalling in my life. You know, I thought I deserved better. I can tell you today I did deserve better. I did deserve more than I got, and I had to grieve that. You know, I had to grieve the fact that I did not get a childhood, that I did not get to be 5 years old, that I was never daddy's little girl, and that I was never the apple of anybody's eye. And then I could let that stuff go. So what my life taught me when I was young, because my parents were incapable of caring for me, that they left me with my mother's parents. Now, my mother's parents were incapable of caring for me. You know, they were the ones that passed on the disease. And so my grandparents would take me with them everywhere they went, and I sat in a car in a bar parking lot for hours upon hours upon hours. I learned how to shoot pool, and I was damn good at it, you know. And I would see the people come and the people go, and sometimes they would send me home with people. And those people were not safe people for me. And so I learned to hide in closets and under beds. I learned to run away and hide and escape. I learned that the world was not safe and there was nobody coming to save me. And so I started to build up these bricks and these walls in my life. Nobody was ever going to get me. Nobody was ever going to hurt me. Nobody was ever going to make me feel anything. You know, and at 9 years old, I wrote my first suicide letter. My grandmother was constantly trying to take her life. And so I learned that, you know, suicide ideation was something that was very normalized for me. And I got to tell you that even in my recovery, it was something that was normalized for me. I'm going to put a timer on, sorry. And so, you know, by the time I found drugs, you know, so my cousins and I started to experiment with stuff at 12 years old. And, you know, at 12 years old, we didn't really know where we were going to find something. So I lived in the housing project. I lived in the housing project, and they bussed me off to school with all the rich kids. And I felt the shame of I'm from that broken family because my parents divorced when I was six. I felt the shame of I'm that kid from the housing project. I felt the shame from I have that single mom. I had the shame of she was, you know, a young mom. I had the shame of I would be told that my grandmother was passed out under the hotel table. And I just felt shame. I had so much shame that wasn't mine to own. But when you're a little girl, you don't know it's not yours to own. And I just kept thinking if I could only be good enough and different and whatever, maybe they'd stop using and maybe somebody would love me. And so I would go to school and nobody would see this little kid that was sad. And nobody would see this kid that was hungry. And nobody would see that this kid had been up all night stopping the adults from fighting. And nobody cared that I seemed to be alone in this world. And so, you know, I had a hate on for the world. I didn't come in Narcotics Anonymous with a chip on my shoulder. I came in with a fucking boulder on my shoulder. You know, look out, world. You're not going to get anything from me, and I'm going to take everything I can get from you. And I lived like that. I let my fists do the talking. I let my words wound you. I could decimate you quickly. I found your weaknesses, and I went in for it. I went for the jugular, you know, and those were the things that I learned at home. It was like whoever hit the hardest got, you know, ruled the roost, whoever yelled the loudest, and, you know, so these bricks were being built up around me, and, you know, I'm grateful for that I found drugs. My cousins and I were trying to find things when we were young. And, you know, we were doing shit like, you know, baking banana peels and smoking them. Because somebody told me that if you did that, you'd get high. You know, like that was what we had in our possession. Because I went from this housing project to this little town. My mom sent me to live with my grandparents. And I went from, you know, living in this housing project to the only neighbors I had were cows. And I'm grateful today. I can tell you that today I see that the God of my understanding was working in my life way back then. Because the trouble that I got into in that little hick town was enough to get me to Narcotics Anonymous. Had I stayed in the city, I probably would not have made it here. And so, you know, I found real drugs at 13, and I can just tell you that I've never met a drug that I wouldn't try, and I never met one that I didn't like. And I'm grateful that you taught me at the beginning of my recovery that I did not have to take the garbage truck all the way to the dump. I could get off whenever I wanted. Because I started to disidentify myself when I got here. You know, I hadn't done this, and I hadn't done that, and I hadn't been to jail that I remembered. You know, I had been to jail, and thank God for blackouts, because I don't remember. You know, and so I just kept, at 15 years old, I'm from Quebec. And if you know anything about Quebec, you can drink at 18. So I'm sure you all waited till you were 21, you know. But so at 15 years old, I was working in the bars, and it was okay. It literally was okay. There was, you know, and it was okay to go home like that because nobody was really watching me, you know, and they were gone half the time anyways. I was really just by myself. And so, you know, I started to work in the bars at 15, and I'm still going to school. But I was that kid that, you know, your parents did not want you to hang out with. I was definitely the girlfriend your mother did not want you to date. And I was probably the kid in the school that they were drawing straws over in class, whether in the teacher's lounge about who wanted me. Because I would tell the teachers to go fuck themselves right to their face. Like, I just, authority, anybody who intimidated me, like, I just had a hate on for the world. And it was just, come on, make my day, you know? And I always laugh and I say, God knew what he did when he made me 5'3" I'm actually 5'4", but I'm shrinking, thank you, age. 5'3", and you know, a female, because had I been 6'2" and a male, well, there'd have been a different story, you know. As it is, I swung a few 2x4s. You know, I'm from a hillbilly heaven, because as I was swinging this 2x4 at my boyfriend's head, my grandmother came out of the door and cocked the shotgun and fired it in the air. So he got in his car and he left. Like, that's just the insanity that I grew up with. That was a normal day in my home, you know. So, you know, I 15, I'm living a life that, you know, I have children. I would not want my children to live that life. And it just, you know, the lines got crossed, the drugs got harder, the life got harder. And I just kept hoping, if I find somebody who loves me, I'll be okay. Like, I had this hole in my soul that only love can fill. And I kept looking for people, places, and things outside of myself to fill it. And that doesn't work. And so I did meet this guy. I met him at 18. And, you know, wherever you go, there you are. And I was a horrible girlfriend. He's the guy I swung the 2x4 at. I gave him more black eyes. Nobody gave me black eyes. I gave him. You know, I was the violent one in my relationships. You know, I was the one, you know, just a sidebar. I had a pretty major fight with my husband 10, 12 years ago, and you know, the first thing he said to me was, am I safe to go to bed? You know, you can take the kid out of the projects, but you can't take the projects out of the kid. And I'm still grateful for that part. Anyway, so you know, I'm with this guy for 2 years, and I'm lying, and I'm cheating, and I'm getting high, and I'm manipulating, and I'm doing all those things that we do, and you know, he leaves me. He leaves me in the last, you know, brokenhearted, and the one thing that I had realized when he left me was that I had actually let somebody pass those walls a little bit. You know, those walls kept me safe for many years, but they also kept love out. They kept light, they kept goodness, they kept, you know, all of the things that there were beautiful people in my life. God put people in my life, like that teacher who took a special interest in me when I was in grade 2. Like that friend's mom who, you know, would talk to me a little bit longer, or feed me a little bit more, or just say, you know, you're not messed up, Sandy, you just need somebody to talk to. But I couldn't let him in. And so when this guy left me, these walls that I had built came crumbling down to the ground. And I tried to take my life. And I ended up in a psychiatric facility. And, you know, the overdose wasn't going to kill me, but the drugs that I had taken were about to give me a heart attack, and I was 20 years old. And so I spent 2 weeks in the psychiatric facility, and they told me that I had a drug problem. And I'm like, I got a drug problem? I got a family problem. You know, you fix them, and I'll be okay. Like, I sincerely believed that everything that was wrong with me was your fault. You know, I didn't get the nice hair, and I didn't get the nice clothes, and I didn't get to go on the trips, and I didn't get the parents who loved me, and I didn't, you know, like, you all seem to get something that I did not get. And so, you know, I didn't stay clean when I got out of that facility, and I can tell you that then I thought, maybe it's the people, places, and things, and I should just leave. And so I had gone to college, I had a diploma, you know, I always had money. You know, I wasn't one of those addicts that had to, you know, beg, borrow, and steal. I made a lot of money, and I spent a lot of money. I was young and cute, working in the bars, and it just, you know, the drugs come easy, and the parties were hard. And so I decided that I was going to move up north, I was going to get to know my father that I didn't know, and that I was going to leave all of this behind. You know, we talk about it in our literature, about the geographical cure. I didn't know that's what that was. I was just getting away from all you crazy people. And so I got off of the bus at 3 o'clock, and by 7 I was high. Because wherever you go, there you are. And I just found those people. I gravitated towards them. They gravitated towards me. And the coolest part about being clean is that when I'm in an airport, or I'm, you know, I was in a resort a couple of years ago getting a coffee at the coffee shop, and a guy reached out to get his, and he had the NA symbol on his wrist. And I said, hey man, I got the NA symbol too. So now when I go out, like, I seem to attract people who are in recovery. That's how this recovery process works. You know, the stuff that I put out to the world is the stuff that I attract back, and I don't put out shit anymore. I put out good stuff. And so, you know, I moved up north, and I used to live, and I lived to use. That was the entire time that I was up there. And I got introduced to ways and means and stuff that I thought I would never do. And so I moved back to Ottawa because I needed to get away from those people then. And, you know, long story short, I met another man. He was going to save me. We were dating for 3 weeks. You know, I was ready to marry him. And I'm lying and cheating and stealing and using. And I can't stop. You know, when he says, Sandy, I can't do this. And he left me. Now you need to understand that I have always hoped that if I poured my love into you, you would love me back and I'd be okay. You know, you've told me when I got to recovery that it was an inside job, but I didn't want it to be an inside job. I wanted somebody in my life to notice me, to love me, to care for me. Isn't there anybody in this world that thinks I have value? And so when this man left me, and one of the speakers talked about it, about your soul crying. My soul cried. She was tired and she was done. And she was sick of living this way. And I felt so old and I was still so young, but I was done. And you know, we talk about that moment of silence, and I can tell you that that moment of silence is sacred, people. It's sacred. Still to this day, I have a list of at least 10 names that I have to say in that moment of silence. And they're my family members, because I'm the only one who's here. And so in that moment of silence, you all prayed for me, because I had never met anybody from Narcotics Anonymous. I had never been to a meeting. I had never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. I did not identify with the other fellowship. I specifically chose drugs and was proud to be a drug addict and a fuck up because I was not like my family. I was never going to be like them. I was smarter than them. I was wiser than them. And so in my moment of desperation on my knees crying, it came to me that maybe there was something for somebody with a drug problem. And I got out the phone book. You know, we had those things back then. And I started going through the pages and I found the number for Narcotics Anonymous. And I called the hotline. And I called my friend, the girl that I had picked up with. You know, and right from the get-go, there was something different about me and everybody else because, you know, they'd do one and they'd go home and I'd want more. You know, they'd get a consequence and they would stop and I wouldn't. And right from the get-go, there was something different. So anyway, she comes and she picks me up. And I say, look, you know what? The one thing I had learned in this psychiatric facility was how to kill myself. And so this night that I'm on my knees and I'm crying and I just don't want to live anymore and I don't know what to do because I just can't go on, you know, I said, can you please come and get me and keep me safe till I go to this Narcotics Anonymous meeting? And she came and she got me. She took me to her house. And she's not one of us, but she married one of us, you know, and I'm pleased to say he's now in recovery. Now, I come from a very, very, very small town, and I'm talking 700 people, and there are 25 of us in recovery, you know, like that's the miracle. So she picks me up and she brings me to his house, and obviously, you know, I've been crying for hours, and what do you do when you're a using addict and you see somebody in distress? You want to get them high. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't think I can do this. I'm going to this Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I think I can't use. And so, you know, she dropped me off at the door. I didn't know anybody. She didn't come in with me. And I walked through the door of my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting by myself. You know, I know we talk about the courage that it takes to walk into these rooms, but, you know, I had courage when I walked into that bar by myself, and I had courage when I walked into the clubhouse by myself, and I had courage, you know, when I would call somebody out to the street by myself. Like, you know, so walking into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, was the best thing I've ever done for my life. I can't tell you who I saw. I can't tell you. Well, I can't tell you what I heard, and I can tell you, you know. So they're reading, and they said, you know, if you sit back and listen. And that was my first resentment, because I found out I could have been high in that room. You know, I'd like to say it was the only one I've had, but no. That was my journey in the Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know who, I couldn't hear anybody. I just cried and cried and cried. This was the end of my life. Little did I know it was the beginning of my life. You know, little did I know that I was about to embark on the most amazing journey. That I was about to find myself. I was about to discover self-love and self-respect and self-worth and self-esteem. I didn't know those were the things I was going to find here. I thought it was the end of the road and the end of living life. And so I just kept going back. I didn't stay clean in the beginning. Alcohol is not a drug to me. I don't have a problem with it. And so, you know, it took a couple of times. And I remember going to a meeting and I'd say, yeah, I drank last night. And they'd say, keep coming back, Sandy. We love you. Keep coming back. And then one night, you know, I've been coming for 3 weeks now. I don't know about you, but I'm arrogant and cocky, and I know it all, and I know what's best for me. And so, you know, y'all told me that I should not go. It was in December. It was near the Christmas parties were starting. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, all my old friends from Northern Ontario, where I'd hit big time bottom, are going to be there. I'm just going to go. And you warned me. You said, it may not be the best idea for you to go. But I went anyway. And I did really, 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 really well till 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, and then I remembered you said, if you're craving, you should talk to somebody, Sandy. So I decided to talk to the fella sitting on the pool table beside me. And before long, I was in the washroom. So when we tell you newcomer to talk to somebody, we mean somebody in recovery, you know? Somebody clean who's going to keep you clean. I went home that night, and I was so ashamed of myself. I'd only been coming here for 3 weeks. But in those 3 weeks, you had loved on me. You remembered my name. You welcomed me. You made me feel like I mattered. You made me feel like I belonged. I felt like I disappointed you. And if I disappointed you, you were going to kick me out of this club. And I picked up the phone and I called somebody, Brian O. I said, Brian, I got high last night. And he said, Sandy, we love you. Come back. And I went back and I went to my meeting that day and I picked up my white key tag in December the 6th, 1987 as my clean date. I have a birth date, I have a wedding anniversary, but there is no date that is more important in my life than my clean date. If you are not excited about your clean date and your recovery, your disease is excited about your relapse. I live this program still today like my ass is on fire. I am in the middle of Narcotics Anonymous because I never want to fall off of that edge. You know, we talk about our predecessors in here who, you know, through their hard-won experience, how we got the traditions and the birth of NA and all of those things. But let's talk about our hard-won experience from the predecessors who picked up one more time. The ones who didn't make it back to these rooms. The ones who died in bathtubs and found a week later. Those were my friends. And so I don't use because I need to honor their efforts. I need to honor their memories. I need to let them know that their death was not in vain. I know we die if we pick up one more time. You know, it's not always been easy being me. I'd like to tell you that I got clean, my life got wonderful, I applied all of the principles of this program, and you know, I have just been going tickety-boo ever since. That's not the reality of my recovery. I got clean I got crazy, and then I got healthy. You know, I found myself at 5 years clean. I got married in the first 3 years because I was getting old. I was 26, and I needed to do those things. It was the socially acceptable thing, you know, and 7 months later, that marriage ended. And I found myself, I had started to distance myself from meetings. And so I found myself on the end of a crisis distress line talking about suicide again. And I talked to that person for 4 hours. And I said, you know, the insanity of this call is that I have a room full of people who love me, accept me, want nothing but the best for me, and I'm letting my pride and my ego keep me from reaching out to them. And I got my ass back into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I have never left since. You know, you told me if I never leave, I never need to come back. And I'm not coming back. I know I got another party in me. I don't know if I'll make it back here. And I'm not giving up this life that I have. I paid for my seat. I don't care if you don't like me. I don't. I hope I make friends, and I can tell you I have made some friends. But if the only thing I ever get out of this program is freedom from active addiction and you know, messing my life up day over day over day over day, I have just hit the jackpot. So, you know, I keep coming back, and I am involved in service. I got a service position when I was 3 months clean, and I became a member of H&I at 5 months clean. And except for that little brief period where I was married and crazy, I've always been involved in service. Always been involved in service. You know, I believe I was saved to serve. I used to think, I can't dance, I can't sing, I can't draw. I really don't have any talents. But I can tell you that I can transmit the message of Narcotics Anonymous. I can transfer the love that I have. I can infect you with wanting to be clean and crazy and having fun, because this is what this is all about. That's what my life is about. So, you know, I found myself at 5 years clean dating this newcomer who was an old timer who just kept changing clean dates. And we were going to have a wonderful relationship, you know, and it lasted 2 years, and 6 weeks into it should have ended. But, you know, the more I stayed, the more I lost myself. And the more I stayed, the more I said somebody else was more important than me. And the more I stayed, I didn't know how to leave. Until I found myself in a Neuronon meeting, crying about how can't he stop using. And as I listened to everybody in the Neuronon meeting talking about me, I realized I was in the wrong place. And so I came back to, you know, I came back, I was still in NA, but, you know, the first, second, and third step in the beginning were about drugs for me. The first, second, and third step have helped me deal with my unmanageable relationships. They have helped me have financial serenity. They have helped me, you know, deal with the loss of jobs and my body image and my eating disorder and all of those things. 1, 2, and 3 are things that I do over and over and over again because they enhance my recovery. I have sought outside help because I needed somebody to help me take those bricks down and to let you in to love on me. Because you kept trying. And so I found myself at 7 years clean, $40,000 in debt. I owed zero when I got here. Zero. And $40,000 at 7 years clean. That's 31 years ago. I owed a shitload of money. Because every time I had a feeling, I went shopping. Every time I had a feeling, I fucked somebody new. Every time I had a feeling, you know, I didn't know how. So why are we here? Through our inability to accept life. I didn't know how to accept life. In my early recovery, I have long hair. I like long hair. I don't have a lot of it, and I'm getting more elsewhere than on my head, but welcome to getting older. You know, I got my hair cut short. It was the end of my life. I had zero coping skills. And so I drive across the city, and I'm pounding on the door, and my friend opens it, and he just sees I'm a mess. He has no clue if somebody's just been killed, I've been in an accident, what? And my friend, I'm want to see his roommate, and you know, he says he's in the bathroom, he's in the shower. I run into the shower, he's in the shower, I assume naked, because usually you are, and I'm crying and wailing about my life is over because I got a bad haircut. Zero ability to manage my life. Zero coping skills, you know? And so at 7 years clean, I decided that, you know, I looked back at my relationships and the names had changed, the faces had changed, the people had changed, but they were all the same. And it was like, wow, I'm the common denominator in all of these dysfunctional relationships. You know, I put the fun in dysfunctional. And so I decided to stay single, because what happened with this fellow was that my heart just got broken. I had completely lost myself. I was 7 years clean and I was crazy. At 6 years clean, I'd woken up with this massive headache. And I thought I had neck strain from working, you know, sleeping funny or whatever. And it turned out that I had a brain bleed. I had an aneurysm and I had paralyzed my right side and I had a stroke. And I was 6 years clean and I was still with this guy who, while I'm in the hospital, stole my car and cheated on me. And I was still gonna stay with him. I was crazy, crazy. I was not healthy. I was not working this program. It talks about find a new way to live. I was in here living the way I lived out there, just not doing the dope. I didn't know how to change my life. I wasn't willing to let a higher power guide me and lead me. What if he picks some other fucker, ugly fucker for me? You know? What if that's his will for me? I'm not ready to accept that. I'm not, you know? And so you told me that it was an inside job and that I had to start to pray. And I was praying. I'd started praying early in recovery, but you know, praying and turning your will and your life over to the care of God are two different things. I was not willing to let anybody drive my bus but me. And I just kept driving it into the wall. And so at 7 years clean, I decided to have this real conversation, you know, with my higher power. And I just said, and I call him Howard. Because when I got clean here, we said the Lord's Prayer. And so it says, goes like this: Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So at 7 years clean, I decided to have a conversation with Howard. And the conversation went like this: I really don't know who you are, and I know I'm supposed to trust you. But you have to understand that anybody I've ever trusted has betrayed that trust. And I am so afraid to give my life to you. Be patient with me, but take my will and my life and guide me in my recovery. It's still the prayer that I say today. You know, and I can tell you that God has never messed up my life worse than I have. Ever. Hard stop. And part of the reason of that is that I don't know. My bar is low, people. It's low. You know, I remember that after that relationship ended, like if you had a bicycle, that was a mode of transportation. And I was willing to settle for that, you know? And you told me that I deserved more. You told me I was settling. You saw me hurting. And so I stayed single. And I started to work this program, and I got some outside help. I got some help to help take down my walls, you know, to help stop destroying my life, to stop thinking that all I deserved was shit, you know. And slowly, slowly, I built a life that's worth living. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I got here young, and I felt so old. And I'm old and I feel so young. But I'm about to start using my clean date as my birthday, because I do not feel 61. You know? Like, we get to get old here, people. we get to get old. What a gift. You know, the kid who wanted to die all her life does not want to die anymore. Oh. You know, at around 10 years clean, I met my husband. He's not one of us, and I have to thank him because he makes this possible for me. You know, I'm going to tell you, if you have a relationship that stops you from going to Narcotics Anonymous, you stop that relationship. Yeah. Nothing comes between me and my recovery. Nothing. If you love me, it's because I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. If I'm a good employee, it's because I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. If I have integrity and dignity and compassion and empathy and caring, it's because I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the line in Just for Today that says, as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. I was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. As long as I follow that way, you have nothing to fear. And who would have thought of that in this little package? You know. So, you know, I've been with my husband for 28 years. 28 years. Sometimes he's my soulmate, and other times he's my asshole mate. We are not always compatible, and we are not always on the same page, but we always love each other, and he is my biggest cheerleader. You know, relationships are hard. Relationships with a sponsor are hard. Relationships with friends are hard. Relationships with partners are hard. Relationships with work are hard. And, you know, I want to just talk a little bit about that because, you know, today my recovery is about mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and financial serenity. All of them. You know, that $40,000 debt that I had, I paid it off. It took me 8 years. I owe no money today. Zero. Zero. My friend Nancy used to say to me, why don't you pray for financial serenity? I'd say, I want to pray for the lottery. Much easier. You know, but I prayed for the financial serenity and I have it. And I'm not rich, but I have enough. And I have more than enough because I get to live a life that's incredible. You know, my emotional stability is about making sure that I honor my spirit. You know, I found out that the thing that I did, that all of this pain and suffering in my life was because nobody ever taught me to honor my spirit. They never taught me that I had value, that I had worth. And you know, I used to be upset that nobody did that. And much like our, you know, we're not responsible for our disease, but we are responsible for our recovery. You know, I'm not responsible for the wounds that were instilled in me, but I am responsible for healing them. Yes. You know, I do not have the right to let them bleed all over everybody. And they still hurt me more than they hurt anybody. You know, they're the ones that, you know, tell me that I'm, you know, I don't have anything to say, nobody's going to love me. They're just inviting you because they feel sorry for you. You know, when my sponsor doesn't return my call, I'm like, fuck her, I'm done, why is she calling me back? You know, I don't have time, you know. And then recovery kicks in and I practice spiritual principles and I say, you know, I tried to get a hold of you for a day. And she, oh, I'm so sorry, you know. There was a lot of stuff going at work and I was really, you know, she had shit going on. Wow, imagine. Other people have shit going on, you know? And so my emotional honoring my spirit is that only good people get a seat at my table today. Only good people. People who are kind and caring. The people who love this program. The people who are willing to lend their hand to a newcomer. You know, there are always newcomers in my home and always newcomers in my life. I'm sponsoring two newcomer ladies now. I'm not too clean to want to give what I was given freely. I'm not too clean to, you know, not want to pick them up and take them somewhere. You know, the other thing is my physical. So I have a lot of health issues. I had that brain aneurysm. They told me that, you know, my life expectancy was 48. I was diagnosed with an illness, and so, you know, at 6 years clean, when I was laying in that hospital bed for 2 weeks, you came. You all came there. You showed up. My family did not. Narcotics Anonymous has been there for every difficult moment of my life and every beautiful moment of my life. I have a biological family, but you are my logical family. You are the ones who know me. You know, the other thing for me about the physical health is that, you know, I wish I loved myself physically. That's not something that has ever come easy for me. And aging, that's just thrown a whole other monkey wrench right into that. You know, because I feel good, and then I look in the mirror, and I'm reminded that I'm not 30. You know, but I spent so much of my life hating on myself, hating on my shape, hating on my hair, hating on my nose, hating on my belly, hating on the thighs, hating on, and I need to tell you that I'm about 30 pounds heavier than I ever was, and it was never enough. It's not about the number on the scale, it's about I don't honor my spirit. And my spirit is a part of me, and if I'm beating on it and starving it and telling it it's fat and ugly and stupid, I'm never gonna heal. And so I don't do that to myself today. And I eat, and I don't abuse laxatives, you know, and I don't purge. I was at my first convention sticking my finger down my throat with toilet water splashing in my face because I ate a piece of toast. I'm not going to do that to myself anymore. I am a human being who deserves my love. You know, the other thing that I want to share is, you know, these parents that I had, I would hear you all at conventions and you'd be saying that my parents did the best they could do and I forgive them. Fuck you. That ain't never going to be me. Never. They destroyed me. They damaged me. How can I ever forgive them? And when I started to care for myself and love myself and realize that it was an inside job and I needed to be my own hero and I needed to stop the abuse and I needed to set the boundaries and I needed to do self-care, my self-esteem, my self-worth, my self-love, my self-esteem is never going to build if I'm kicking myself in the head. You all have never treated me as badly as I've treated myself, ever. You know, if you did, I'd take you outside. But I did it. So these two parents, you know, I came to a point in my life where I realized that I am loved. I am somebody in Narcotics Anonymous. We talked about the people that we have lost. We remember them. And when it's my time to pass, I know somebody's going to remember me. And a picture at a convention is going to go by and you're going to think about me and you're going to smile. I have value and worth today. And so, you know, I thought, my God, my two parents have struggled all their lives. You know, my mom, the first time I remember my mom telling me that she loved me, I was 6 years clean. It was when I had that brain aneurysm and she called me up on the phone and she said, I love you. And I was like, thank you? What do you do with that? What do you do with your mother when you're like, you know, 29 years old telling you I love you for the first time? I needed to call my sponsor. And my father, at 59 years old, told me that I love you for the first time. You know, when they say don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, I gave up expectations of these two people. They were two flawed human beings trying to do the best that they can. And the grace of this program, the love that you gave to me, allowed me to give love and compassion and empathy to my parents. You know, my mother went to her grave never knowing what it was like to be loved. 10 years ago, my mother tried to take her life. Now, I gotta tell you, I was nasty to my mom clean. You know, I would tell her what I thought of her because she told me it's an honest program. Honesty without compassion is just mean. And so, you know, my mom tried to take her life, and I was the daughter who sat by that bedside for 48 hours while she was in a coma. And when my mom woke up, the first thing she saw was me. And she said to me, "All these years I thought you hated me. And now I know you love me." My mother died by suicide 7 months later. But my mother knew I loved her. My mother knew I cared for her. My mother knew that I forgave her. What a gift you gave me, Narcotics Anonymous. I am living my life without regrets. I am telling the people that I love that I love them. I am traveling to the conventions that I want to travel to. I am doing the things that I want to do because you only get one turn around this sun. And if you are here in this room, you have a chance and you have a choice. You know, don't let your inability to accept personal responsibility for your life take you away from recovery. You have a choice. To shut up? So, you know, I'm going to close with this. I think that conventions are rocket fuel for our recovery. I think if you're not having fun, you better find a new tribe. I think if you're not in service, what are you waiting for? You know, if you're my sponsee, you must have a home group. You must do service. You must work the steps. You must call me because I'm not a mind reader. And you must help other people. Because when I got here, there were people holding the door open for me. And I held the door open for people. And the ladies coming behind me need to hold the door for the other ladies coming behind. You know? So please, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. My name's Santa and I'm an addict.